If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. Such a clear and oft-repeated refrain throughout the Gospels. It means simply that love is synonymous with keeping the commandments. However, human love can be a rather messy affair, full of volatile and fickle emotions. We have become so habituated to equating love with emotion, with feeling, that we fail to grasp that keeping the commandments of God is an altogether better way, a higher road. And this precisely because doing the will of the beloved causes the lover to die to himself and to his feelings. After all, love resides in the will, a spiritual power far removed from fickle feelings. Jesus assures us that those who keep his commandments, he will always know. Keeping the commandments shifts the expression and experience of love from our hearts to our minds. And our mind is not our brain, but uses our brain. Those who keep his commandments come to know him. As St. John says, we can be sure that we know God only by keeping his commandments. Anyone who says, I know him, and does not keep his commandments is a liar, refusing to admit the truth. In short, it is by keeping the commandments that we both love and know God. Nothing else is admissible evidence before the heavenly tribunal. Keeping his word is the narrow door through which we must all enter. If we attempt another way, he will say, I do not know where you come from. Away from me. So knowledge always precedes love, for you cannot love that which you do not know. For this very reason, when we are explaining the faith to others, we need to engage people's willful attention. We want them to want what we want, to know what we know. So as to make our belief attractive, we sometimes make note of the sensational, such as miracles and extraordinary phenomena, great saints and mystics. And once people are interested, the spark has been ignited. We can fuel the fire of faith with the complete knowledge of beliefs which are gradually learnt. Sadly, for the most part, the majority of our Catholic population think they know the faith, but actually don't know the basics. The crisis of catechetics that we endured in the 70s remains with us today. While admittedly technology has given us in our present age a source to learn sound doctrine quickly, however, that's dependent on the site that we visit. Evangelization can take many forms, but the best way is always a personal way. One person engaging another person about the persons of God. Our enthusiasm can be and ought to be contagious. Such vitality for what makes the soul healthy is far from proselytism, which is a means of coercion or persuasion to make another individual change to a different religion or belief system. Islam insists on this methodology because for them everyone is a potential Muslim at birth. Islam proclaims to be the only true religion from the beginning, and all other versions are in error, having deviated from the true path. Yet history tells another story. Remember, the Middle East was once all Christian, Catholic, as was Northern Africa. Islam invaded from the 8th century on and employed proselytism to increase its numbers. And people were forced to accept God as Allah, Allah being Arabic for the Lord. And they did that by a formal declaration, which they call Shahadahin. According to their holy book, the Quran, the non-Muslims, that's us, when they arrive in our country in the past, or even still today, once they take over, you're given these options. You can either leave, you can be persecuted by fines and discrimination, you can be killed, or you can simply convert. That's proselytism at its best. If one publicly leaves the Christian faith, our faith, they are an apostate because they have defected from the true religion. During persecution, apostates abound. Another sin against faith is heresy. A heretic is someone who stays in their religion, unlike an apostate, but refuses to accept all its teachings. Over the last 40 years, this cafeteria version of Catholicism has sadly become too popular. We are, after all, obliged to accept all the teachings of Christ as put forward by his church. And it is the fullness of faith that ultimately attracts converts to the church. Now, a convert is someone who has had a conversion. A conversion, as the word implies, is when someone turns away from something and turns towards someone, that being God. The largest private TV network in the world, EWTN, has for over 20 years featured men and women from varied backgrounds, Christian and non-Christian, on Marcus Grody's The Journey Home program that shares their conversion story. Though their points of origin and details all differ widely, the journeys ultimately lead them to embrace the fullness of the Catholic Church, the Church that Christ himself founded. The first step in the normal process of conversion is the investigation and examination of the credentials of the Church, which often is a painful labour in the present time with our unrelenting media assault. The external grace which draws a man's attention to the Church and causes him to begin his inquiry is as various and manifold as there are individual inquiries. It may be something that grants him some advantage, as is the case with Henry IV in France. Or it might be the case of someone was impressed by what a pope said or did, as is the case with Frederick von Herter. Whatever may have been the initial motive, if the study be pursued with an open mind, we hold that it will lead to the knowledge of the true Church. The intellectual conviction, however, is not yet the act of faith. One may hesitate or refuse to take the next step, which is what we call the goodwill to believe. And this leads, through grace, to the third and final act, the act of faith itself. When I say, I believe what the Church teaches because God has revealed it. These three acts, especially the last, are in accordance with Catholic teaching, and they are supernatural acts. And then follows what we call baptism, by which a believer is formally received into the body of the Church. Since it is the duty of embracing true religion of divine right, it is evident that no state can forbid the fulfilling of this duty as is happening in China. Nor should any worldly considerations be allowed to interfere with our call to seek salvation. And because all are bound to enter the Church to attain salvation, it follows that the Church has a right to receive all who apply for reception, of whatever age or sex or condition they may be. To the Church alone, it belongs to lay down the conditions for reception and to inquire into the interior dispositions of the one who presents himself for admission into her bosom. For the Church is our mother. Evangelization has existed since Pentecost. From the beginning, we have baptized from Simon's Peter's converting of Cornelius in the first reading, to Augustine among the English, Patrick to the Irish, Boniface to the Germans, Cyril and Methodius to the Slavs, Francis Xavier to the Indians in Asia, and even Mary MacKillop to us. The work ultimately is God's, but we are his hands and his instruments.